Chapter 21. The Plan, Part 1. Signor Speranza didn't know when the film had become so important. He only knew that it had. Why should a bunch of big shots come to their town and use it for their own purposes? Why should they take everyone's hard work and throw it away as if it didn't mean anything? As if it was garbage? He kept thinking of Gemma, laughing in the makeup tent, of poor Smilzo, who really did look a bit like Humphrey Bogart, if you really squinted, or maybe if you closed your eyes. He kept thinking of the day they'd shot the set piece and of the fireworks bursting in the afternoon sky. He thought of all these things as he sat on the sidelines at Speranza and Sons over the next week, squashed behind his desk on a folding chair. He thought about it as the voices of Signora Gallo and her crew and Dante Rinaldi receded into the background, and he pored over the compendium, running his finger down each page. He stopped when he got to St. Michael the Archangel, patron of those preparing for battle. Yes, he closed the book with a satisfied snap. That was the one. The night before the premiere, his prayers were answered. "Nino, what are you doing?" Betta was sitting up half asleep and shielding her eyes. Bambolina was nestled beside her, having successfully over the past week wormed her way out of the playpen and onto Signor Speranza's side of the bed, relegating him to a camping cot on the floor. Signor Speranza was fully dressed and standing at the door of the bedroom, peering through the crack into the hallway. He motioned for Betta to be quiet.
"I think the coast is clear," he whispered. "This is my chance."
Betta sat all the way up.
"Nino," she crossed her arms, "I hope you're not about to do something stupid."
Signor Speranza threw his hands in the air and forgot to be quiet.
"Madonna mia, Elisabetta, I know what I am doing."
Betta rolled her eyes.
"Don't get arrested."
Signor Speranza crept out of the hotel and across town, and at 11 p.m. on the dot he rapped on the front door of Smilzo's house. It had never before occurred to him to wonder what his assistant wore to bed, but when it was revealed to him now, he looked up at the night sky.
"Is he doing it on purpose, Lord?" he asked beseechingly.
"Boss?"
said Smilzo, squinting. He rubbed his eye with the capacious sleeve of his flannel nightshirt, which cut off a humiliating 10 centimetres above his scrawny ankles. The tassel of his matching sleeping cap swung back and forth.
"Smilzo," said Signor Speranza in strained tones, "where did you acquire that nightgown?"
Smilzo looked down, startled.
"This, boss, this was my father's."
Signor Speranza frowned.
"Don't you have anything else of his that you could wear instead?"
Smilzo started.
"No, boss, he..."
His ears that were sticking out on either side of his cap turned pink.
"He took everything else with him."
Smilzo stared down at the ground then and looked so sad and foolish with his skinny white ankles that Signor Speranza's moustache twitched. He pictured his assistant rummaging hopefully in a closet for something that had belonged to his father, and finding only this ridiculous nightgown on a lone hanger, and the thought of it made his throat close up.
"Oh," he said, and then lamely, "it's very nice." "Boss," said Smilzo again, rubbing the other eye, "is something wrong?"
Signor Speranza straightened and took a deep breath.
"Yes," he said, "and we are going to fix it."
In 18 hours, 453 people would travel to Prometto for the premiere of Dante Rinaldi's surprise pop-up movie. They were, with the presumed assistance of St. Francis Cabrini, patron saint of parking spaces, going to park their cars, file into their seats in the newly constructed amphitheatre, or on the nearby grass, and wait in delicious anticipation for their idle, stupid face to fill the silver screen. Well, thought Signor Speranza grimly, they could wait all they wanted. He and Smilzo crept down the Via Sant'Agata. Every light in every establishment was extinguished, except for a lone lamp somewhere inside the church, and an orange neon sign at Maestro's that spelt fresh, like a cattle brand stamped into the night. Signor Speranza tiptoed to the door of Speranza and Sons, Smilzo close at his heels. He could not see inside, because the green screens that had covered the windows for the last week had not yet been dismantled, and a piece of brown butcher's paper had been taped over the door to prevent the intrusion of unwanted light.
"This will only take a minute," he whispered. He unlocked the door, opened it, dimly perceived the form of Angelo, Signora Gallo's cinematographer, asleep in a chair, and whipped the door shut again.
"Bossa,"
whispered Smilzo, scurrying after his employer, who was barreling down the street.
"What's happening?"
"Plan B," Signor Speranza flung over his shoulder. Ivano Maestro crossed his arms and leant back in his chair.
"You punched my father in the face, Signore."
Signor Speranza's moustache twitched from side to side.
"I did do that," he said, bowing his head gravely, "and I feel mostly sorry about it."
"He's going to have a gold tooth," said Ivano, frowning.
"Probably he will look like a pirate."
Signor Speranza nearly chuckled at this, as Signor Maestro had already looked overwhelmingly piratical, and it was possible the acquisition of a genuine gold tooth had been more a matter of destiny than anything else. But as he cast his eyes downwards to conceal his merriment, he happened to intercept the alert stares of two of the family's intrepid Dobermans, who were slinking about under the vast dining table, and he immediately sobered.
"If we help you," Ivano continued, "will you put Ernesto's song back in the movie?"
Signor Speranza looked round the polished table at the 15 maestro boys, who were all looking expectantly back at him, except for Ernesto, who was staring at his own hands in his lap.
"Absolutely," said Signor Speranza. "Absolutely I will do that."
20 minutes later, Signor Speranza and Smilzo were crouching inside the butcher's shop alongside Ernesto and Pietro Maestro. Ivano Maestro was across the street, standing atop the roof of Speranza and Sons and awaiting their signal.
"Okay," said Signor Speranza. "Now."
Pietro Maestro flicked the switch for the neon fresh sign on and off 3 times. Then Smilzo opened the door of the butcher's shop just wide enough to admit the passage of a megaphone.
"Angelo!"
he said, his voice echoing across the street.
"Angelo!"
At first, nothing happened.
"Come on, come on," Signor Speranza muttered, staring at the door of his shop.
Then he heard a faint jingling sound. The door opened, and the sleepy, puzzled face of Angelo the cinematographer appeared.
"Now, now," Signor Speranza whispered.
Right on cue, Ivano dropped down a length of line from his fishing pole. Attached to the end and bobbing weirdly was Smilzo's mother's toilet paper doll, bereft of her toilet paper, her staring eyes and oddly billowing peach crochet skirt, more bizarre than ever in the eerie neon gloom. Angelo's eyes widened in terror. He took off running down the street, and Ivano, who, as it turned out, was quite adept at running so long as he wasn't expected to move his arms like blades or pump his legs like pistons, ran nimbly after him down the adjacent roofs of Prometto's shops, so that every time poor Angelo looked over his shoulder, in much the same manner as Tom Cruise, it appeared that the toilet paper doll was in relentless pursuit.
"Quick, let's go," said Signor Speranza.
He and Smilzo flitted across the street, Signor Speranza dimly aware in his hurry of a light switching on in the rectory. They pelted into Speranza and Sons. Smilzo made for the computer at the back, while Signor Speranza stood guard at the open door. Smilzo muttered aloud to himself as he powered the computer up and raked through the files. Signor Speranza swept his eyes over the square and up and down the block for any sign of Angelo returning.
"Go, go, go," he thought, in tune to the rhythm of his heart.
"I did it, boss," called Smilzo, his voice at a fever pitch. "The Dante film is erased."
"Good," said Signor Speranza, turning round. "Now, label our film as the right one."
"Okay, boss."
Smilzo bent over the computer again, and then straightened suddenly, startled by his own thoughts.
"But, boss, once they see the wrong a film is playing, won't they force us to turn it off?"
Signor Speranza waved his hand.
"Tomorrow," he said. "We will take care of that tomorrow. Come on."
Smilzo saved his handiwork and shut the computer with a snap.
"Okay," Signor Speranza whispered. "Time to go."
They were just on the point of escaping when Angelo, out of breath and wheezing, jogged into sight. Signor Speranza whisked the door closed and he and Smilzo crouched behind it.
"What do we do, boss?"
yelped Smilzo.
"Shush!"
Signor Speranza ripped a corner of the brown paper covering the door and peered outside. Angelo was 10 meters away. 5, 3. Signor Speranza's heart was like a crazed bird banging against its cage. What should he do? What should he do? Lock the door? Hide in the bathroom? Across the street there was a piercing sound. Signor Speranza and Smilzo covered their ears. Angelo covered his ears too, and turned to see where the sound had come from. A light switched on in front of the church of Sant'Agata. Don Rocco stood within it, along with Ernesto Maestro. The priest lifted Signor Speranza's megaphone and called into it. "Hey, Mr. Movie Man! Have you heard my friend sing?" Then Ernesto Maestro, who required no amplification and who could probably be heard from space, burst into Vesti la Giuba from Pagliacci, and Angelo the cinematographer was so spellbound and bewildered, Signor Speranza and Smilzo were able to slip right past him, and he didn't even notice the priest flashing a subtle thumbs up. Chapter 22 The Plan Part 2 Just before dawn, Signor Speranza dreamt of when he was a boy. As before in his dream of Gemma, he wasn't himself, he was watching from a distance, a trespasser tiptoeing at the fringes of a forgotten memory.
"Giovannino, è pronto!"
It was Nonna Delfina, his grandmother, toiling over a makeshift stove by the fire. Giovannino, small and in short pants and suspenders, hurtled into the kitchen. He tried sticking his hand in the pot. Nonna Delfina laughed and scolded and shooed him away.
"Lavati le mani, Topolino! Wash your hands, little mouse!"
Signor Speranza watched as his younger self scurried to the sink and worked the pump. He looked on as the little boy whisked his hands through the water so fast they were barely wet, and then dried them hurriedly on his untucked shirt. Signor Speranza chuckled. That was the way he had used to wash his hands. That was the way. He remembered.
"Ora," called Nonna Delfina, "aiuta la nonna. Help your grandma."
Giovannino scampered to the stove and obediently, and with great concentration, ferried 2 bowls of soup from there to the little wooden table. His errand accomplished, he next did something which he had always done and which his older self had forgotten until this moment. He pointed to his grandmother's right hand, which had been withered by a stroke, and which she kept pinned to her side like a baby bird's wing.
"Give to me," he said imperiously, like the little lord he was, only child of his parents, and thus far infallible in the attainment of his life's ambitions. "I fix it."
Nonna Delfina tipped her head back and laughed, showing her one remaining tooth like a single standing picket in a fence that has been blown down.
"Okay, Dottore Topolino, you fix it."
With her good hand she guided the crumpled one. Signor Speranza shuffled closer and watched, his heart stuck in his throat. Giovannino examined his grandmother's hand closely, his tongue sticking out of the side of his mouth. There wasn't anything wrong with it, he was thinking. The thought was plain on his frank, open face. Carefully, one by one, he peeled back the fingers and then took a step back to examine the fruits of his labour. Nonna Delfina's palm lay open. Giovannino crowed and jumped up and down.
"It's fixed! It's fixed! I fix it!"
Nonna laughed and laughed. The beautiful, forgotten sound of it rent at Signor Speranza's heart.
"Topo sciocco," she said. "Silly mouse."
Slowly her fingers curled back up, like the petals of a flower closing. She kissed Giovannino on the top of his little head.
"Topolino sciocco."
Suddenly the dream lurched sideways, like an old projector that had run out of film. The misty kitchen dropped away, and Signor Speranza was in the shop. Signora Gallo was there and laughing.
"Topolino sciocco," she mocked. "What makes you think you can fix anything?"
Then the shop was gone, and they were on the edge of a cliff, and Signora Gallo was pushing him over. As he fell, she tipped her head back and cackled, and Signor Speranza snatched at the air and screamed. He woke to Carlotta standing over him.
"Mamma said I may use real hairspray for the movie tonight, Nonno," she announced.
It was 6 o'clock in the morning. Carlotta had, almost from infancy, an unbreakable habit of talking to people who were sleeping as if they were actually awake. She stood at his bedside now in her mother's robe and slippers, a constellation of hot rollers and their accompanying metal-pronged clips sticking out in all directions on her tiny head.
"Do you think you'll want to wear hairspray also?"
Carlotta asked, nibbling at her piece of toast with Nutella and jelly, as Nonno Guido, that incorrigible opportunist, kept watch below.
"I can ask my mother for you if you want."
Smilzo's rain, which still hadn't materialized since the set piece was filmed, had come in the night, and the last of it was drizzling when Signor Speranza attempted to take Nonno Guido outside. The dog stopped at the threshold, hopping backwards and issuing a warning bark.
"Che cosa, testa dura?"
Signor Speranza muttered and dragged him outside, but once they were exposed to the elements, Nonno Guido yelped in genuine terror and tried to scramble up his master's leg. Realizing what was happening, Signor Speranza scooped him up.
"It's okay," he murmured,
chuckling softly and nuzzling the tiny head.
Imagine, he thought, here was a creature new enough that it had never before seen water fall from the sky.
Shortly thereafter, Smilzo's mother showed up, looking like Smilzo in an A-line dress, and presented Signor Speranza with a crocheted dinner jacket for him to wear to the evening's events. It was not necessary for Signor Speranza to will the tears to his eyes. He just had to recall the welts on the back of his knees from the director's chair, and they came of their own accord.
"You really shouldn't have done this, Signora," he managed to choke. "It's really, really too much."
Things got crazy after that. At 10 o'clock, a flock of Signora Gallo's people descended upon the hotel. Makeup artists, stylists, tent technicians, caterers, decorators, and a phalanx of entertainment reporters, and Signor Speranza sneaked out, bound for a secret meeting at Sant'Agata, with a queasy feeling in the pit of his stomach that perhaps he had made a big mistake. They met inside the dim church at noon, Signor Speranza, Smilzo, Don Rocco, and the Maestro brothers.
"It seems as if this is turning into a very big deal, Signore," said Don Rocco uneasily.
He was standing at the door, peeping out into the square, which Signora Gallo's people had also infiltrated, and where a crew was setting up an elaborate lane of cones. A pair of men rolled out a length of red carpeting that was to stretch all the way to the amphitheatre behind the church, and another two unravelled enormous balls of fairy lights. Ivano Maestro was all business. He ignored what was going on outside, staring directly at Signor Speranza.
"Tell me what to do," he said.
It was very simple. All they had to do was to convince Dante Rinaldi and Signora Gallo to leave the premiere before the film started and of their own free will.
"That way," said Signor Speranza, "we'll be able to play our film, the film we made, and there'll be no one to stop us."
A little cheer went up from the Maestro brothers, and Smilzo beamed, but Ivano leaned back in his pew, eyes narrowed, and crossed his arms.
"And exactly how will we accomplish that, Signore?"
Signor Speranza signalled to Smilzo. Smilzo rummaged in his backpack and produced two objects, a remote control with a single red button and a small blinking black box. There was a clatter just outside, and everyone jumped. Then the door opened and threw a slant of light across the pews.
"Mariana!"
rasped Signora Barbaro, peering inside, and calling over her shoulder to Signora Pedula.
"Look! Jesus is here, and the apostles, too!"
Signora Pedula toddled into sight and peered inside as well. Then she flung her hands into the air.
"Ah!" she cried. "Che bello!"
The plans were laid. Ivano Maestro was going to casually bump into Dante Rinaldi at approximately 7 p.m., just before the latter was due to walk the red carpet, thereby providing perhaps 3 to 5 seconds of misdirection, during which his brother Ignacio was to slip the blinking black box into the target's jacket pocket. They would then wait until the optimal moment, when Dante was in full view of both the assemblage and the press, to deploy the mechanism.
"What if there are microphones, boss?" asked Smilzo, who had lost control of his senses and could not stop giggling. "Imagine what it will sound like if there are microphones!"
"I hope we are doing the right thing, Signore,"
said Don Rocco nervously as the group disbanded.
"Do you think we are?"
Signor Speranza glanced at the altar, before which he had married Betta and his mother had married his father, and at the holy water font wherein Carlotta and Gemma and every other Prometto baby, including himself, had been baptized for 150 years. He looked at Signora Barbaro and Signora Pedula, kneeling in the first pew, silent for once, and bent over their rosaries, praying the prayers of old ladies, but looking remarkably small from where he stood, like children.
"I hope so, father," he said truthfully, "but I really don't know."
After parting ways with his co-conspirators at the church, Signor Speranza checked his watch. It was 1:15. Thanks to the recent publicity, as of that morning's receipts, the safe at Speranza and Sons contained €72,175, more than they even needed. If he hurried, he would have just enough time before the evening's festivities were underway to retrieve the money, drive the hour and a half to the Water Commission's office in Reggio, pay off the pipes, and get back to Prometto without anyone missing him.
"Just under the wire," he muttered grimly,
thinking of Monday's looming deadline just 3 days away. He hurried across the square and found the door to the shop unlocked. He pushed it open cautiously, and the bell jingled overhead.
"Smilso," he called, frowning.
Had Smilso somehow overtaken him when they were leaving the church? But Smilso wasn't there.
"Oh, good, it's you. I was just about to call you."
It was Signora Gallo. She was sitting at the back of the shop at Signor Speranza's desk, flipping idly through the compendium. Her red lacquered nails clicked together.
"Where did you get this thing?" she asked. "It's very funny."
"Funny?" Signor Speranza's cheeks burned. He hastened over to the desk.
"My apologies, signora," he said, whisking the book out of Signora Gallo's reach. "I should not have left personal things lying around to get in your way."
"In my own shop," he finished furiously in his head. He held the compendium behind his back.
"What can I do for you?"
he asked, glancing at the clock on the wall and thinking of the Water Commission and traffic.
"I thought you would be getting ready for tonight."
Signora Gallo laughed. Then she leant back in Signor Speranza's swivel chair and wagged one sharp-nailed finger.
"You are forgetting something, signore," she said, her voice a teasing, menacing trill.
Signor Speranza looked at her sharply. What was she talking about? His eyes slid over the desk and caught on Smilzo's laptop.
"The computer," he thought, with a well of panic.
Maybe she had come here to take a last look at the film before tonight. Maybe she had figured out what they had...
"Dante's fee."
Signora Gallo's words cut across Signor Speranza's thoughts. Signor Speranza froze. He lost his grip on the compendium, and it slipped from his fingers, smacking onto the floor behind him. His mouth went dry.
"Fee," he whispered and swallowed.
Signora Gallo laughed again.
"What do you think we are running here, a charity?"
She spun around in the swivel chair so that she faced the safe.
"Now how do you open this thing?" she murmured.
Signor Speranza felt the earth lurch under his feet.
No, this was not possible. This could not be happening. "Signora, please," he gasped, rushing forward. "We are a very small community. We do not have a lot of money. We cannot possibly be expected..."
Signor Gallo's back went rigid. She sat up straight and turned back around in the chair. Her already flinty face had turned to stone. She folded her hands on the desk.
"Understand me, signore," she said, deathly quiet. "You should be in jail for what you've done. If you don't give me this money today, right now, then I will sue you. I will sue your wife. I will sue your daughter. I will sue that cute little granddaughter of yours. I will sue every person in this godforsaken town."
She stared at him, and her eyes burned cold fire.
"Is that what you want me to do?"
The next few moments passed in a blur, and when they were over, Signor Speranza was all alone in his father's shop, staring into an empty safe and weeping. That was it. After all their hard work, they were done for. Prometto was finished. At 5 o'clock that evening, Signor Speranza stood in front of the mirror in his bedroom getting ready for the premiere. He had come now at last to the end of things. Prometto was dying, and he felt as though he was dying too. He wondered what he should say.
He had thought a good deal over the years about last words. He even had a book of famous ones at the shop, mixed in somewhere amongst the vacuum manuals, phone books, and industry magazines. The ones that had always impressed him were the long, assiduously grammatical ones, like Sir Isaac Newton's. I don't know what I may seem to the world, but as to myself, I seem to have been only like a boy playing on the seashore, and diverting myself now and then finding a smoother pebble or a prettier shell than the ordinary, whilst the great ocean of truth lay all undiscovered before me. How on earth had he managed that? And had there been someone standing by, perhaps professionally trained in shorthand, to get it all down? Signor Speranza had always suspected that Sir Isaac, on perceiving that the end was nigh, had likely read his final utterance from a prepared sheet, and then just clamped his mouth shut and waited it out. Imagine if someone had come in at the end and startled him, and if his last words had subsequently wound up being something ridiculous, like, "Shut that door." Signor Speranza had always assumed that when his own time came, he would be able to muster something profound. But as he stood there, wearing the dinner suit he had rented earlier in the week, minus the jacket, contemplating not his own death, but the death of everything that mattered to him, nothing particularly brilliant came out. "I don't want any of this better," he said, his voice hollow. "After tonight, nothing will be the same." "You look very handsome, Nino." Betta was soft and glittering in the pale grey silk dress she had once thought she would wear to Gemma's wedding, along with her mother's hinge-back earrings with the diamond flowers. "I'll have to tell everyone now," he said, and his eyes filled with hot tears. Betta rested her chin on her husband's shoulder. She looked in the mirror too and sighed. "Try not to think about it tonight, Nino. Let it be tomorrow's problem, okay?" Tomorrow. Signor Speranza sighed. Tomorrow he would have to tell everyone about the pipes. Tomorrow everyone would hate him. He reached for the crocheted jacket that was folded in a scratchy bundle on the dresser. "And here is today's problem," he said wryly, pulling it on. Just then, one of Signora Gallo's associates, a young costume designer from Milan, happened to waltz past and stopped abruptly in the doorway. "That is a sharp jacket, Signore," she cried, without a trace of sarcasm. "Is it Versace?" Via Sant'Agata teemed with people. Signor Speranza could not remember ever seeing it so crowded, although his father had told him of the time before he was born, when the Pope had visited. "That's why you're here, Giovannino," Luigi Speranza had told his son. "Your mother and I prayed and prayed for a baby. Then the Pope came and blessed the village, and that's why you are here." Signor Speranza thought of that now, as he shuffled along the red carpet in his crocheted jacket. Betta, Gemma, and Carlotta were lost somewhere in the crowd ahead. He could see Speranza and sons to his left, but it didn't look as though it belonged to him any more. Nothing looked the same in this sea of strangers. "What do you think of all this, Papa?" he murmured aloud. But if his father answered, somewhere away at the back of his mind, then Signor Speranza couldn't hear him. "I'm getting a little nervous, boss," said Smilzo, who was walking beside him. He kept hunching his shoulders as if hiding, and then suddenly popping up and craning his head to scan the crowd like a whack-a-mole. "I have not seen Ivano, have you?" "He'll be here, don't worry," said Signor Speranza. But the truth was, he was getting awfully worried himself. How might a crowd like this react, he wondered, if they came all this way to watch a Dante Rinaldi movie and were given a Smilzo one instead? The line halted, and there was a cheer up ahead. Signor Speranza and Smilzo both strained to see. It was Dante. He had stopped in front of a bank of photographers. Now he grabbed a startled Antonella around the waist and swung her into a dip. "It's pretend, Smilzo," said Signor Speranza, as his assistant flinched. "It's all pretend." Soon they arrived at a sort of holding area, approximately 30 meters from the amphitheatre, where a white tent had been erected, and cocktails and hors d'oeuvre were being served to the cast and crew before the official show began. "How many pipes would this pay for?" Signor Speranza wondered as he entered the tent, and was both surprised and relieved to be hit with a blast of air conditioning. Ivano Maestro motioned to him from the other side of the tent, and the worst of his anxiety dissipated. Betta spotted him and waved. "I'm taking Carlotta to get some food, Nino," she called, as Carlotta dragged her away, and then it was just him and Smilzo. A server whisked by with a tray of Campari and sodas, and they each took one. The tent was filled with the soft, pleasant din of people talking and the clink of plates and glasses. Smilzo downed his drink.
"I think she still likes him, boss," he said, wiping his mouth on the back of his hand and staring balefully at Antonella.
She was perhaps 5 meters away, next to Dante, in a little cluster of people. She wasn't talking. She held a glass frosted with condensation in her right hand, and her left hand was clamped tightly around her right forearm. Her neck strained forward as she followed the conversation. She looked, Signor Speranza thought, supremely uncomfortable.
"I don't know if she does, Smilzo," he said, frowning.
A second tray of Campari and sodas passed by, and Smilzo grabbed another glass. He drained it in a gulp.
"I am going over there, boss," he announced, handing Signor Speranza his empty drink. "Smilzo, I don't think—"
Signor Speranza tried to snatch at the back of his assistant's jacket, but he was not quick enough.
"Oddio," he muttered, glancing up at the ceiling of the tent. "Can you hear me in all this racket, Lord?"
Signora Catuzza sidled up beside him.
"Have you tasted these, Signora?" she asked, wrinkling her nose with distaste.
She was wearing a sequined evening dress, but her dish towel from the cafe was still slung over one shoulder. She held up a puff pastry with the tips of her fingers.
"Are we supposed to eat these?"
"Nino!"
Betta came hurtling over, wild-eyed.
"I think you have a problem."
Signor Speranza snapped to attention. He looked where Betta was pointing.
"Oddio,"
he muttered again. Smilzo was getting into it with Dante Rinaldi. He was swaying slightly on his feet and gesturing at Antonella and poking his finger into Dante Rinaldi's chest. Unfortunately, Signor Rinaldi's underlings had fanned out behind their overlord, the better to witness the current spectacle, and were, in effect, blocking the concerted efforts of Maestro Brothers 1 and 2 to deposit an artificial flatulence device in his pocket. Signor Speranza groaned.
"Smilzo!"
"I couldn't do it, Signore,"
said Ivano Maestro miserably, finding Signor Speranza in the shuffling throng when everyone had been instructed to proceed from the tent to the amphitheatre for the opening ceremonies.
"I could not get close enough."
"Give it to me,"
said Signor Speranza grimly, and the blinking box switched hands. Signor Speranza and Don Rocco sheltered in the cool vestibule of the church, away from the heat and the tumult of the crowd.
"Do you think this will work, Signore?"
Don Rocco asked, anxious and hovering. Signor Speranza did not answer.
"Tape,"
he said curtly, holding up one hand, like a surgeon calling for his instruments, and then,
"Scissors."
When he was finished, he beheld his handiwork.
"Do you see that, Father?"
he said, puffing out his chest.
"Do you see that with God, even so evil an object as this can be made into an instrument of his peace?"
Don Rocco frowned. Signor Speranza and Don Rocco stole out of the back door of the church and scuffled over rock and brush and through a stunted grove of fig trees, thereby circumnavigating the line of people waiting to get into the outdoor cinema from the road and circling round on the other side.
"Boss, Father, where did you go?"
hissed Smilzo when they joined him in the wings at the side of the amphitheatre's retractable screen. The red carpet ended here abruptly. Signor Gallo had brought in enormous speakers that were parked on either side of the stage and had rigged a microphone that stood waiting at its centre. Dante Rinaldi and Antonella were walking arm in arm towards it.
"You were right, boss," Smilzo whispered, his eyes bright. "She does not like him. She says that after tonight, she never wants to hear the name Dante Rinaldi again."
He grinned crookedly.
"I told him he was not so much an actor as an internationally renowned wearer of tank tops."
Signor Speranza looked appreciatively at his assistant and clapped him on the back.
"Good for you, Smilzo. I'm proud of you," he said. "Now, please stop talking."
They had to get the moment exactly right. Dante began to introduce Antonella.
Some of you may already know my leading lady, he said in that studied, drowsy voice, letting his hair fall momentarily over one eye. There was a shimmer of cheers. The sound of the crowd was light and fizzy like a carbonated drink. Signor Speranza scanned the rows and rows of people. Wasn't that something, he thought, a little dizzy at the sight of it. Wasn't that something, that all these people were here, in Prometo, in a cinema his own uncle had built? Wasn't that something? Dante finished talking about Antonella. Then he dipped her again, as he had in front of the cameras on the red carpet, and spun her out till she spun off stage. "An ass," Antonella said, straightening her hair when she was safely in the wings. "He is a colossal ass." Smilzo beamed. "I would also like to thank my agent, Camilla Gallo." Dante angled his head slightly towards the opposing wings, where Signora Gallo was standing in a blinding gold sheath dress. He summoned her to join him, and she did, waving and bowing her head in a self-deprecating manner totally at odds with her actual personality. "When, signore?" squeaked Don Rocco, who couldn't stand the suspense. "When?" "In a second, father," Signor Speranza blustered. "Don't rush me." He waited until Signora Gallo had turned and was heading back to the wings. He waited until Dante adopted a nauseating, insincere expression. He waited until he gripped the microphone with both hands and began bleating out the speech Signor Speranza had heard Signora Gallo forcing him to rehearse on the showroom floor of Speranza and Sons. "This film was a passion project for me," he began, and the crowd fell silent. "I wished to return to my humble roots and to work with simple, ordinary people. People like Antonella there," he said, and turned to grin vacantly in their direction. Antonella crossed her arms. "Ass," she fumed. "And this village," Dante continued, waving a vague hand. "What can I say?" Signor Speranza crouched, placing Don Rocco's rumba with Smilzo's blinking black box taped to the top of it on the ground. He gave it a gentle nudge in the right direction and wished it godspeed. Then he took the remote control from his pocket. "Care to do the honors, father?" he said. Don Rocco shook his head. "No, signore. I think you've earned it."
214. Signor Speranza counted. That was how many people remained in the audience after Dante Rinaldi and his people left, in a trail of fury and expletives. 214. Just two more than the number of Prometo's own citizens, although Signor Speranza could not determine at a glance, and in the dark, who the extra two were. By some glorious quirk of technology, or semi-miraculous divine intervention, Don Rocco and Signor Speranza were divided as to which, the button of Smilzo's remote had jammed, and the rumba, which should, by all conventional standards, have embarked on a randomized cleaning pattern, had instead followed Dante Rinaldi at its heels doggedly and determinedly until he was out of both sight and hearing. They had screened Smilzo's movie, and it was great, because everyone knew everyone. The crowd had cheered when the title card lit up the screen, "From Prometo with Love." "He's a play on James Bond, boss," Smilzo had whispered, and Signor Speranza had nodded and smiled. "Perfect, Smilzo, that is perfect." Signora Cazzuzza had brought everybody food and handed out pots and pans and spoons to the children so they could make noise. And when Smilzo and Antonella had kissed on screen, so did the real Smilzo and Antonella in the audience, and everyone went crazy. When it was over, somebody had handed out sparklers. "You did a good job, Zio," Signor Speranza said, patting his uncle on the back. "You have driven us all to a state of destitution, but you did a very good job." Zio Franco nodded, looking out over the work he had done, his old wrinkled face unabashedly happy in the light of the dancing sparks. "You did a good job too, Giovannino. Your parents would be proud of you." Signor Speranza checked in with his father then, now that he could hear himself think, visiting him at the back corner of his mind and finding him bent over his peppers. "Tell Mama I miss her," he whispered. "Tell her I said that, Papa." There was a bang and a whistling sound, and a stream of fireworks went up from the churchyard. Everyone stood and looked up together at the sky that was theirs, which hung over their own tiny piece of creation. "Tomorrow," said Signor Speranza to Berta with a sigh when it was all over. He shifted Carlotta, who was asleep, in his arms. "Tomorrow."
"Shh," said Berta, smoothing the little girl's hair. "It's time to go home, Nino."
Ernesto approached, Gemma trailing happily behind him. "She's not too heavy for you, signore," he asked Signor Speranza. "I can carry her home for you if you want." Signor Speranza looked sharply up at him, this impudent maestro mountain, ready with a retort, but in that moment he couldn't say it. He found himself reminded again for the second time in 2 weeks of that dreadful day Luca Ricci had stood outside his hotel and laughed at his daughter and refused even to meet his granddaughter. This moment, now, felt strangely similar to Signor Speranza, only this time, as Gemma stood watching, it was Ernesto instead of Luca. Ernesto Maestro, strong and dependable, quietly asking permission to give Gemma a second chance at happiness.
"Thank you, Ernesto," Signor Speranza heard himself grumble. "That would be very helpful, thank you." And he handed his granddaughter over. Gemma beamed in the dark.
The crowd dispersed. At the bottom of the hill by the church, Signor Speranza saw Don Rocco.
"Tomorrow, father," he said, tracing a cross over his heart. Don Rocco nodded. "I will help you, signore," he promised.
There came a loud screeching sound, and then a bang, and everyone jumped.
"More fireworks, father?" asked Signor Speranza, frowning.
"No, signore," said Don Rocco, puzzled. "I don't..."
He didn't finish his sentence. He didn't finish his sentence because at that precise moment, and in the ultimate validation of the dire predictions and judgments of junior plumbing inspectors the world over, the pipes along the Via Sant'Agata, which had been installed over 75 years earlier, and some of which might or might not have been patched with bubblegum, simultaneously and spectacularly burst.
Chapter 23. 6 months later.
"Stop making that face, Nino," said Berta out the corner of her mouth.
It was February, and they were standing on the portico of Signor Maestro's house, Berta holding a glass oven dish of lasagna, and Signor Speranza a bottle of Prosecco. The hotel, which had been fully booked for 6 months running, had been left in the dubious care of Smilzo's mother, who had arrived for her temporary employment, cheerfully armed with a brocade bag, protruding from which, Signor Speranza trembled to see, were a pair of crochet hooks.
"Don't worry,"
she had said, glancing over his shoulder, perhaps in quest of unadorned toilet rolls.
"I will take care of everything."
"I'm not making a face," Signor Speranza said, indignant, lowering his eyebrows even more than before, and expelling two puffs of cold air from his nostrils like a cartoon bull.
"They're coming," Berta hissed. "Be quiet."
The door opened, and everyone shouted,
"Hey!"
and bundled them into the house.
"No, no!"
shrilled Carlotta, running over. Gemma had got her a new red velvet dress for Christmas, with a sash in the back, and she was wearing it now, dashing around in her stockinged feet, trailing a yellow ribbon on a stick, Nonno Guido scampering beside her. Then a pack of maestro cousins, all boys, and also holding ribbons on sticks, went thundering past, and Carlotta took off after them, whooping. Signor Speranza's moustache twitched.
"Do you see better? Do you see what is happening? They are making her into a hooligan."
"Hush," said Berta. Then she nudged him in the ribs.
"Yes, Signor Maestro, be nice."
Signor Speranza rolled his eyes to the ceiling.
"Ciao, signore," Berta called gaily, kissing their host on each cheek. "I am just going to put this in the kitchen."
She and her tray of lasagna whisked away. Signor Speranza and Signor Maestro stood in the midst of the party and eyed each other. Signor Speranza strained to recall what Berta had told him about making conversation.
"Keep it light, Nino," she had said. "Just make observations, nothing controversial."
His moustache bristled.
"It's cold," he said flatly.
Signor Maestro grunted. Signor Speranza scanned the immediate area for further inspiration.
his eye catching on the folding table next to the door where guests had piled their baby shower gifts for Gemma and Ernesto. 5 months ago, the same table had been heaped with wedding presents.
"Could be her girl," he said, shrugging.
Signor Maestro tipped his head back and made a barking sound, and Signor Speranza could see the dull flash of his single gold tooth.
"It will be a boy, Speranza," he said. "Believe me."
"Signore," Don Rocco approached with a tumbler in his hand, "come stai?"
"Boss," Smilzo hollered with a huge wave. He was on the other side of the room and had spotted Signor Speranza through the lens of the Betamax Beta movie.
"Can you go back outside and come in again, boss? I missed it."
Nearly all of Prometto was at Gemma and Ernesto's baby shower. Zio Franco had died just before Christmas, but not before learning that there was going to be a new baby. He had been happy about that. Signor Speranza had learned who the two extra people were at the screening of their movie. Rilla Bari and Matteo Fiori, a reporter and a photographer from an entertainment magazine. That very weekend they had published a story about Prometto's little homespun project and about Zio Franco's magnificent amphitheatre, and everything had changed after that.
"It's called a revenue stream, boss,"
Smilzo had explained archly from the comfort of his own swivel chair and desk, which were now arranged at the back of the shop alongside Signor Speranza's.
"Since there are no other cinemas around here, we have what is called a corner on the market."
Smilzo, Signor Speranza noticed with some consternation, had in recent days taken to playing it fast and loose with the word "we." This was likely owing to a certain rash decision he himself had made in the emotional aftermath of witnessing his assistant in a hand-me-down nightgown to take him on as a partner in the business, a decision which was reflected in the freshly printed awning outside the shop, which now read in cramped script, "Speranza and Smilzo's Vacuum Cleaner Maintenance and Repair and Major Motion Picture Production Services, LLC." Remarkably, however, the Water Commission had seen the situation the same way as Smilzo, and given Prometto a second chance. Eligible for payment plan. That was what the junior plumbing inspector had stamped on their form this time, after Don Rocco had called, urging him to come back.
"Did you also hear his confession when he was here, Father?" Signor Speranza had asked, interested. "I would imagine someone in that line of work is carrying around more than the average number of sins."
"Signore," Signor Rossi waved from across the room just as Smilzo had, "terrible news, signore," he said when he finally reached him.
Signor Speranza frowned. He had known, of course, that this day was coming. If there was one thing that was sure in this uncertain world, it was the reproduction rate of schnauzers.
"A new batch?" he asked grimly.
Signor Rossi nodded.
"That's a good way of putting it, signore," he said, wringing his hands. "A new batch."
Signor Speranza considered. He had been thinking about the problem of Bambolina and the schnauzers for some time now, more than half a year, and he thought he might have a solution. The seed of the idea had first been planted during a particularly exasperating conversation with Carlotta several weeks before, when she had claimed that one of the more odious maestro cousins, Roberto, had the answer.
"Okay," Signor Speranza had said testily, "what did the famous Roberto say?"
Carlotta fluttered her eyelashes.
"He said it is simple to solve the Bambolina problem. He said you only have to find something that scares schnauzers but does not scare Bambolinas."
"Ha!" said Signor Speranza.
"And does Professore Roberto have any ideas what that might be? Does he know that a Bambolina is not a distinct breed? Does he know that, cara mia?"
Carlotta had shrugged, indifferent to these entreaties, and content in her belief that Roberto was, if not infallible, at least more knowledgeable than a garden-variety grandfather.
"We'll have to go quickly,"
Signor Speranza said to Signor Rossi and Smilzo and Don Rocco.
"If my wife catches me, forget about it."
"I am going too,"
declared Signor Maestro, striking his fist to his chest, and Signor Speranza, after conferring briefly with God, didn't try to stop him. It was clear and cold at the top of the mountain. The Bosco di Udine was cloaked in mist, and a curl of wood smoke went up from the Rossi stovepipe chimney. It had been a day just like this 50 years ago, when Signor Speranza had seen his cousin Paolo off at the train station, the day when he had passed up his own chance to leave.
"Don't you want to get out of here, Giovannino?"
Paolo had said, his eyes fixed on the distant horizon as if he were already there and gone.
"Don't you want to get out of here before this place strangles you, too?"
"No," Signor Speranza thought now, filling his lungs with the fresh scent of morning and looking out over the crumbling land that had been his father's and his grandfather's before him, and on, backwards into the gulf of time. He was exactly where he was supposed to be. The screen door of the Rossi's house creaked.
"It will not hurt Bambolina, will it, signore?"
Signor Rossi asked anxiously.
"I assure you, signore," said Signor Speranza, "she will be completely unaffected."
They arranged Bambolina on the chilly ground, and then on second thoughts Signor Rossi ran inside to fetch her a blanket. Everything was set.
"This is the damnest thing I have ever seen, Speranza," Signor Maestro grunted. "And you are the damnest thing I have ever seen, signore,"
Signor Speranza muttered. Signor Maestro's cavernous nostrils flared.
"What did you say?"
Signor Speranza waved his hand, impatient.
"Nothing. Smilzo, are you ready?"
Smilzo lifted the Betamax Betamovie onto his shoulder.
"Ready, boss. Action!" Don Rocco knocked on the neighbour's dog flap and whistled softly.
At first there was nothing. Then there was the softly accumulating swishing sound of 32 infant schnauzer paws scuffling over linoleum. In the next second the door was breached. Signor Rossi yelped and bit his knuckle.
"Signore," he said.
Signor Speranza wasn't listening. His eyes were glued to the schnauzers. They moved as one. He saw the very second their intrepid leader glimpsed Bambolina on her blanket. They streaked towards their soft and furry goal. They were nearly upon her. Signor Speranza had a remote in his hand. At just the right moment, he pressed the single red button. The schnauzers, startled out of their wits, scattered like bowling pins, and Bambolina, who was, after all, accustomed to such noises, fell asleep in the sun. Having taken care of Bambolina, Signor Speranza and the others went back to the party. When the celebration was over, Betta stayed to drink coffee and talk it all over with Gemma and Signora Maestro, while Carlotta got permission to go back to the hotel with her grandfather and spend the night in her old room.
"My room from when I was a little kid, Nonno," she told Signor Speranza solemnly, even though she had only moved out 5 months ago.
The two of them picked their way over the wet, chilly beach, Carlotta stopping to write her name in the sand with the end of a stick.
"Do you want me to write your name also, Nonno?" she asked.
Signor Speranza opened his mouth to spell Giovannino, but Carlotta was too quick.
"Nonno," she wrote in tall, wobbly letters.
Signor Speranza looked at his name, crooked in the sand, and laughed. He had forgotten that to a child, Mamma is only Mamma, Grandpa is only Grandpa. He had forgotten what it was like to think like that. They made their way up the mountain just as they had another wet February day, and just as before they came to the battered village sign. Prometo, population 212.
"Zio Franco is still up there," Signor Speranza said, pointing. "Maybe tomorrow I'll send Smilzo to change it."
Carlotta shook her head.
"You don't have to do that, Nonno. Pretty soon my brother or sister will get here, and then the number will be right again."
Signor Speranza's chest tightened, and he felt suddenly as if he might be dreaming.
"Lord?" he asked, and looked up at the misty sky.
There was no answer, but a lone drop of rain splashing into his eye. He yelped and scrubbed it away. How long had he wanted a second chance at this conversation?
"Do you think that's all right, though?" he said carefully. "If Zio Franco holds the baby spot for now, maybe the baby won't like it."
Carlotta yawned and shrugged.
"Babies don't care about things like that, Nonno. They have more important things to do with their time."
Then she lifted her arms the way she had when she was a tiny thing.
"I'm too tired," she whined.
Signor Speranza laughed, and he scooped Carlotta up, boosting her onto his shoulders. He continued walking past the sign that kept tally of the revolving door of life and towards the hotel. His heart was light and his conscience clear.
He did not know what the future held, but Prometo was safe, for now, and that was all he could ask for.
Grazie, signore, he said, glancing up at the sky. Mille grazie.
The Patron Saint of Second Chances, a novel, was written by Christine Simon and read by Tim Francis. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. The Patron Saint of Second Chances, a novel, is available in print from Atria Books.